football today from CBS Sports.
Here we go.
Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
Here we go.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Let's go.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
All right, what's up? Welcome to Fantasy Football Today. It's Thursday. It's May 16th. We got a fun show today. We got a guest interview with Ben Bolin of the Boston Globe, and it's really awesome. I'll tell you about it in a second. I'm Adam Azer. Dave's here. Hey, Dave.
What's going on, New Yorker?
Jamie's here. What's up, Jamie?
Yo.
And Heath Cummings back on the show.
Congratulations.
Thank you for something. I don't know for what, but thank you.
Well, your team is going to get R.J. Barrett
That's right.
NBA draft, and you've always thought that R.J. Barrett was better than Zion Williamson.
That's kind of true.
And so now the Knicks are going to get the better player. I don't know what everybody's complaining about.
We're not complaining. He's morons.
Every Knicks fan in the world is complaining.
No, we're not complaining. Like, we're
disappointed. No, you're not complaining.
No, I talk to Knicks fans. You don't talk to Knicks fans. We're not complaining. Like,
okay, so you and your two friends who root for the Knicks are not complaining.
We have a community. You're not part of. You don't know.
I thought that most people that went to Knicks games were just going to cheer for the other team.
It's just
like,
not
they don't
true.
Actually have any fans left.
No, it's false. Gosh.
Would you be ignorance. More excited about R.J. Barrett or getting Anthony Davis and giving up R.J. Barrett?
Anthony Davis. Now,
so that's what's going to happen.
Would I be excited about having Le'Veon Bell if I knew that the coach of the team didn't want him, didn't want to spend a lot of money on him? So, interesting situation with the Jets. What did we talk to Ben Volen about? We talked to him about the Patriots and the offense, and he gave some pretty interesting projections for the backfield, for the wide receivers. Really, fantasy relevant stuff. And we spoke to him for about 20 minutes at the end of the show. I also asked him about Bill Belichick and the press conferences, just what makes the Patriots dynasty great, kind of an underrated reason. So I encourage you to stick around to the end of the show, hear that interview.
And if you own a lawn, good lawn mowing conversation too.
Very good lawn mowing conversation. Have any of you guys, I'm going to guess the answer is Heath, have you any of you actually ever mowed your own lawn?
Yes.
Nope.
Before I moved down here, I had 5 acres and I mowed like 3.5 of it. Almost every week.
Wow.
What happened to the rest of it?
It was wooded.
Oh.
How about that? I did not take Dave for a lawn mowing kind of guy. But okay, I'm sorry I doubted you.
I'm out there every Saturday morning, bandana on, no shirt, drinking chocolate milk, sweating it up and cutting lawns.
I cut other people's lawns in high school to earn extra money.
That is the best image, Sketcher Doodle. I hope you're listening. Let's get to the show. We got some fill in the blank to get to, but let's start with that Jets news. There's not a lot of news going on right now, but they fired Mike Maccagnan. Adam Gase getting some more control, reportedly did not want to. So was it that he didn't want to sign Le'Veon Bell or he didn't want to break the bank on Le'Veon Bell?
I'm going to guess both, but I'm sure a lot of it had to do with the money. Look, if you get him cheap, why would you say no? He seems to be of that mentality of you don't pay that position. And I'm sure that probably went into it. He also apparently did not want to pay for a center because they were in the Mitch Morse conversation as well. It kind of goes to what he said at the owners' meetings. You know, when he said that he doesn't want to overwork one guy. You look at the track record. You know, Jay Ajayi was good, and then they traded him because the personalities clashed. Kenyon Drake was good. He didn't work him a lot. You know, he used the veteran guy in Frank Gore. So if you were excited about Le'Veon Bell, I hope you still are. If you weren't excited about Le'Veon Bell, as I am, I'm not drafting him.
We get the impression that Adam Gase would much rather have someone that's going to do exactly what he says in the exact way he says.
In every way possible.
Than someone that has talent.
The look, I mean, we're based in South Florida, so I listen to a lot of local radio because I'm friends with a lot of these guys. And the overwhelming conversation in the last 24 hours has been, if Adam Gase did not get along with you, you were basically out of a job. Now, a lot of that had to do with the players. And you look at the guys who he didn't get along with, and they were pretty high-profile guys. You know, Ajayi, Jarvis Landry, Ndamukong Suh. He had a problem with Rashad Jones. He didn't let him play in one game. And he sent Jay Ajayi home, you know, in the season opener against Seattle in his first game as a head coach. So he's got some pretty instead of working things out, he seems to just say goodbye, and he couldn't work things out with Mike Maccagnan. And, apparently he won the power struggle.
And thankfully, Le'Veon Bell is a team first guy. Right. You don't have to worry about having any conflicts with the coaching staff.
It's literally, I mean, you know, I've heard this a lot again, the last 24 hours and Adam, you can certainly appreciate it. He won the Game of Thrones.
Yep.
You know, he got his way in this power struggle for the Jets. It's just, it seems very baffling. Now, if they get the guy that they want, the Douglas guy from Philadelphia to run things as the general manager, you know, he seems to be a guy that a lot of people think can do the job, but you're coming into a situation where you have to sort of take a back seat to the head coach, and that's never a good thing as a general manager.
He's going to have to bend the knee to the man on the Game of Thrones.
Dave,
well, I've been
right
on Twitter enough to know how this lingo works for Game of Thrones. Listen, but the Green Throne is like a lawn chair.
When you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die. There is no middle ground.
Not today.
Cersei Lannister, ladies and gentlemen. Not today. No spoilers. We're not spoiling anything. Don't worry. Any other big news items?
That's 3 weeks old, buddy.
Darren Lee going from the Jets to the Chiefs for a sixth-round pick.
That might be an example of a player that Adam Gase didn't like. So that he says, get out of here. It happened right after Gase became the interim GM.
Yeah, he was a big bust. And he goes to the Chiefs. Maybe they can revive him. Let's get into fill in the blank. Let's have some fun here. All right, so I got some wacky ones. I think I have six fill in the blanks. I sent you guys three of them because I didn't want you to be prepared for the other three. But here's the first one. If blank gets hurt, blank will be a star. Dave, you show the most enthusiasm for fill in the blank. So I'm going to
fill in the blank. Thank you.
You go first.
Well, I figured someone else will say the Rams guys, so I went with Mark Ingram, who could get hurt, almost 30 years old. If he gets hurt, Justice Hill will be a star.
I like that one.
If Tariq Cohen gets hurt, David Montgomery will be a star.
What if David Montgomery is already a star?
He's going to be good already, but he will be a star if Cohen gets hurt.
Yeah, I'll go with if Chris Carson gets hurt, Rashad Penny will be a star.
Oh, yeah. Those are good. These are good. How about...
And if Le'Veon Bell gets hurt... Oh, never mind. Ty Montgomery's not going anywhere.
No, but Elijah McGuire could be good.
He'll mix and match, guys. It'll be horrendous.
So... What if we didn't do running backs? Because those are the easy ones. What if we go wide receiver or tight end or something? Probably wide receiver.
If we went tight end, I'd say that if Kyle Rudolph gets hurt or gets traded, then Irv Smith would have a pretty good opportunity.
Same in Philly. Zach Ertz gets hurt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's a great one.
Dallas Goedert.
Got her.
I just lost. Oh, we already have an example of this. And I don't know if he gets hurt, but if he doesn't come back on time, Emmanuel Sanders with Deshaun Hamilton.
You think he could be a star?
I mean, Hamilton was pretty good at the end of last season, the final four games with, an inexperienced situation. I don't know if the quarterback situation is an upgrade or not. We'll find out. But I like Deshaun Hamilton's chances, even if Sanders plays, but I think he could be very good if Sanders is out.
How about if Julio Jones gets hurt, Calvin Ridley will be a star?
Again, I'd say Calvin is already
a star, not a starter for your fantasy team.
Okay.
A star.
I mean, we kind of saw this last year, too, in Houston with Will Fuller, with Kiki QT.
Yep, that's a good one. And, of course, if Eli Manning gets hurt, then Daniel Jones takes the field, and Dave Gettleman's visions come into focus.
What about if Eli Manning and Daniel Jones get hurt, Sterling Shepard will be a star?
He'll be the quarterback?
No. It just might have a good quarterback.
Oh, I see. Very funny. Okay, so...
I mean, another one we saw last year, too, A.J. Green with Tyler Boyd.
I don't think that was really dependent on A.J. Green, though, was it?
No, but, you know, again, you hope that further maturation. You're probably right. You know, he was good enough beforehand.
So let me give you a hypothetical. Let's say it's week six, and Emmanuel Sanders... is out for the season, unfortunately. And Zach Ertz, even more unfortunately, is out for the season. Who's leading your waiver wire column? Dallas Goedert Deshaun? Yeah. Yeah, Goddard.
Deshaun Hamilton's going to get drafted. Dallas Goedert's not going to get drafted.
Okay, here we go. Let's see. I'll give you the fill in the blanks that I already told you about, and then I'll mix in the kind of wacky ones. If I were going to use the friendship strategy, it would be with blank... and blank.
And every time I try to interpret what the friendship strategy is, I get it wrong. So I'm going to try, and you're going to tell me, no, that's not the friendship strategy.
I think you should define it based on what you think it is.
But I'm going to say D.D. Westbrook and Marquise Lee. Two very cheap wide receivers. One of the two I expect will be Nick Foles' favorite. I don't know who it's going to be. I think this offense is going to throw the football more. I think either of them could be a starting fantasy wide receiver. And you could probably get them with like your 10th and 14th round picks.
That was Dave's sort of spinoff of the friendship strategy. Two late round wide receivers from the same team. I think that they have to be, at least one of them has to be like a top 60-ish pick. Like one of them has to be pretty established.
The strategy, if I remember correctly, was built off of the Raiders guys, right? With Cooper and Crabtree?
Cooper and Crabtree.
Taking Cooper in the first five rounds and Crabtree in the first nine rounds.
Keenan Allen and Tyrell Williams was one
that
I did.
What about now, assuming the suspension does happen as we expect, Sammy Watkins and Mecole Hardman?
Yes, 100%. Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, I think. I mean, Mike Williams is going to go a little bit too early, I think.
Two Colts guys now with T.Y. Hilton and Paris Campbell. Although there's a great story in the Indianapolis Star. Apparently, Chris Ballard allowed the local media to go watch film with him of all the draft picks that the Colts had already selected. I think I read it correctly. They already had selected them.
Right, yes.
And so his quotes on Paris Campbell are pretty telling. They seem to want to use him quite a bit, but he's also kind of, I think, limiting the expectations of what he's going to be as a rookie. Like he said, he could be great as a rookie, or we may not get the best of him until year three.
Interesting.
So it makes me a little bit nervous to go all in on him as a key contributor to my fantasy roster, but I think there's certainly a ton of upside there. Like, I would not be surprised if he's the fourth best rookie receiver this season at best.
Would you be surprised if he might be the first best rookie receiver? Like, I just think that range.
Oh,
is in
for
play.
Sure, for sure.
It's in play for a lot of these guys.
100%.
But I think it's, especially in PPR, I think it's definitely the case for Campbell.
Yeah, or he may not play very much. I mean, they also said kick returns and punt returns. You know, so he's going to have a wide range of roles, I think, on that team. And Adam, you've talked about this, you know, with how Andrew Luck spreads the ball around. I think, you know, again, if the Tyreek Hill suspension happens, there's probably more targets in place for Hardman. There's more targets in place now with Baldwin out for Metcalf. There's more targets potentially in place for N'Keal Harry, and maybe even Deebo Samuel.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this was all talking about Paris Campbell because we're talking about the friendship strategy. If you don't know what the friendship strategy is basically my thought of drafting two wide receivers from the same team. They're supposed to independently have good value where you're drafting them. You have to like them, but you also have to be willing to accept that you might just get one great player out of them, like, and be fine with that. So, like, if Tyrell Williams wasn't good, you know, when I drafted Keenan Allen and Tyrell Williams, well, that probably meant Keenan Allen was a star, and the Tyrell Williams pick, whatever, he was a bust, but it didn't matter because you got great return from Tyrell Williams. Meanwhile, or from Keenan Allen. Meanwhile, if Keenan Allen had gotten hurt, Tyrell Williams, in theory, would have returned amazing value from like round eight. So I actually think the Chargers would work well for this scenario. Dave, you had two guys that are sort of in the friendship strategy.
It was the Texans number two and number three receivers, Fuller and Kiki QT.
So where does Fuller go? Where does Fuller get drafted?
Anywhere from round six to eight.
So
has a wide range, I feel like.
I think Hopkins and Fuller are great.
Fuller falls a little bit in PPR just because he doesn't catch the ball very much. He's clearly touchdown dependent. So if he falls, I think past round seven, this qualifies. I mean, you, Adam, you and I are probably a little bit aggressive on Geronimo Allison, but I think Adams and Allison fall in this category too.
Yes, for me, yeah. But Dave, you said Fuller and QT.
They definitely do, but I think you and I push up his value a little bit.
Right.
Most drafts right now are not taking Geronimo Allison where you and I take.
So to go back to Dave and the Texans guys, you want to talk about, you take Fuller and QT.
And it's the idea that QT is someone you'd only start when Fuller doesn't play.
Which is like half the weeks.
Right.
Or QT just outplays him. And if you have to drop one of them, fine. But the theory is one of those two guys is going to be really good.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit different than, you know, banking on the two Chargers receivers, because I think you could start both of those guys every week. And one of them will be great, and I think there will be weeks where they're both good. And there will be some weeks where both stink.
Okay, Jamie, did you want Packers guys that you're...
I mean, yeah, I'd just throw names up.
Okay.
You could probably do it with Alshon and Deshaun in Philly.
Interesting. See, that's an interesting one, because if Alshon got hurt, would Deshaun Jackson's role, you think, increase significantly?
No, I think then you'd see the rookie in Arcega-Whiteside, you know, get a increased role.
I bet you'd see more targets for Deshaun.
I don't think he's got.
Let me say this. I think he's got a role carved out as that deep ball receiver.
Sure.
That's 3-4 targets a week. And if Alshon's not on the field and J-Jaw, as his initials mm-hmm. go, isn't ready, then I think Deshaun Jackson would take on a bigger role in the offense and he'd see an uptick in targets.
Yeah, but I can't see him going consistently above 6 targets a game.
Right, so that's why, to me, it would...
I'm not saying he's going to do a lot with it. I think he would get it, though.
I think you can make this case with any of the 49ers receivers or the Cardinals receivers as well.
Yeah,
because
Pettis and Debo?
Pettis is not going to go before round 7 in most leagues. And Kirk is going to be in that same range also. And I certainly would take my chances on Pettis and Samuel as reserve receivers, both of them. The same thing with Kirk and any combination of most likely Fitzgerald, but Fitzgerald or Isabella or Butler.
Okay, so just last thing on friendship here, since we're all friends. The injury angle does play into it for me, because you know, you're ideally getting two receivers that you could start every week or most weeks with the second guy, but if you're giving yourself a little insurance, because if you take Hopkins and Fuller and Hopkins gets hurt, well, the good news is Will Fuller all of a sudden becomes a stud. I'm not saying that would definitely happen, but I think it's possible. So that's
so is Ridley going too early for this?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know what his ADP is right now.
It's got to be around 5.
Top 50.
He's top 60. Yeah. Okay, so moving on. Next one. Fill in the blank. The most annoying backfield for fantasy owners will be blank.
We all want to say it at once. This is the easiest one.
Yep.
Go ahead.
49ers.
Yep.
Yep. That's what I had too.
Matt Breida also came out today and said, or recently, and said, we're all going to have a role. I'm not going to give away any secrets, but we're all going to play a lot. Yay.
So I guess I can pull up the draft we did last week. I know, Jamie, you said Tevin Coleman was good value.
Yeah, I think if you're getting any potential starting running back, and I still think Coleman's going to be the starter in round 6 or later, that's a good gamble. Because especially what this backfield should be able to produce. Now, if you're talking maybe on a best case scenario, 30 touches for their backfield, which again is high, and they're all getting 10, it's going to be frustrating. But I think at some point we'll start to see a little bit of a pecking order.
And you would expect Coleman to be a top pecking
order. I would expect Coleman to lead the pecking order. But look, it's also one of those scenarios where if you're not counting on any of them, and in that draft in particular, Adam, it went Coleman and then McKinnon very soon after, I think a round or two later.
No,
7 or 8.
Five picks later.
Okay, so even worse. And then Breida, I'm sure, went very late if he even got drafted at all. It wouldn't be a shock if Breida's the best guy.
He did. I'll tell you where they went. I'm just looking at it now. Tevin Coleman went 72nd overall, last pick of round 6. Jerick McKinnon went 5 picks later.
Too soon.
Round 7. And then Matt Breida went in round 9, so that would be 99th overall.
Yeah, looking at their best ball ADP right now, Tevin Coleman's at, and just since this May 1st, Tevin Coleman's at 71.
That's in the end of round 6.
McKinnon's at 78, so almost exactly where he went.
I don't get it.
And Breida's at 122.
Yeah. Don't you just skip McKinnon here? And if you're going to take those two running backs, or
if
you're
that's the
take
ADP,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All you're going to do, well, let's say it was an auction. And you're spending the money, and you know it's only going to take a buck or two to get McKinnon or Breida.
Well, if you can have for a buck, I think you do it.
Which one would you rather have, McKinnon or Breida?
McKinnon.
Yeah.
Okay. The 49ers were 11th in the NFL in rush attempts per game last year, 26.4 per game.
Yeah, but their defense was horrid, and the quarterback was out. So, I mean, you know, those things are going to significantly improve in huge capacity.
Not disagreeing at all.
All right, here we go. Fill in the blank. Some weird ones here.
Well, it's the second worst backfield.
Tampa Bay is pretty bad.
And most annoying. Back.
Oh, and most how annoying. About most annoying.
Bears. Could be the Bears.
Yeah. Washington's going to have a lot of guys that
come week 8
have talent, but you're not going to feel comfortable.
Browns.
Come week 9. I'm sorry. Come week 9, the Browns.
Could be. Week 10.
Week 10, you're right.
Well, the Lions will be annoying.
Oh, yeah. They
won't
be. Because they refuse. Right.
Yeah.
unless guys get hurt, they have no choice.
I think they're gonna. I think they're gonna give Kerryon Johnson a pretty big workload.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up. In PPR leagues, blank Kamara should go ahead of blank Barkley.
What the hell is going on?
This is me saying that Kamara should go ahead of Barkley and making you guys say it.
I agree with Blake.
I don't.
Let's see what Twitter said. I put up the poll a little while ago. Heath, what do you think? Who should go first, Barkley or Kamara?
Barkley.
They're very close. I mean, it's you should be happy with either one.
Barkley had, I think, 36 catches in his last 8 games, if that. Double check.
How many did Kamara have in his last 8 games?
Probably less.
Why? Really?
I have no idea.
I'm just assuming
that Heath knew, and that's why he said that.
33 catches.
Hmm.
Not Kamara. Barkley. 33. Oh. Who do you like in PPR? Saquon Barkley, Alvin Kamara. 63% of the vote goes to Saquon Barkley. Yeah. I don't know. We all saw what Kamara did when Mark Ingram was out. He was the best running back in fantasy in PPR. 35 catches in 4 games.
But they replaced him.
Did they?
They did. I think it's fair to say that they replaced him.
With what? A better player?
With Latavius Murray.
Equal.
Really?
To what Mark Ingram was last year? Absolutely.
To what he was last year, maybe, but not to what he is.
In his last 8 games, Alvin Kamara had 34 catches.
Get out of here.
It was about even.
Well, he had one more. So he's on pace for 2 more catches. I'll take those 2 points in PPR.
Yeah,
all
right. I'm psyched about Kamara and the Saints offense. I think he'll get a little bit more work. Not to say that he'll get all the work, because Latavius is going to get 10 touches a week. But I think that he's just going to continue to be used in unique ways, exciting ways. It's a great offense. And I'm just not sold on Saquon without Odell Beckham taking the top off.
So
he's
going to
get a ton of volume, and he'll get good numbers. I'm just taking Kamara first.
I need to clarify something on my end. I actually would take Barkley first. I just thought it was an interesting topic. And I'm not worried about Barkley's kind of decrease in catches late in the season. I imagine he'll be around 80. But I think it's certainly plausible that Kamara is the number one running back in fantasy and PPR. But I don't know. It seemed like a foregone conclusion that Barkley is going to go ahead of Kamara, and I just wanted to bring the debate up.
Does everyone on Twitter wish they loved their team as much as you love the Giants?
The Knicks, not the Giants.
So you don't love the Giants as much as the Knicks?
No, I don't. Yeah. So Heath has thrown me off. Okay, next up. You know which offense is going to be surprisingly awesome this year? I'll tell you which one. Blank.
Dallas.
Oakland.
Whoa, okay. What did I just do there?
Did you say surprisingly awesome?
Yes.
Or just awesome?
Surprisingly.
All right, so Atlanta wouldn't be a surprise. Maybe Dallas wouldn't even be a surprise.
No, it would be a surprise to me. Dallas, Oakland, Heath?
I'm trying to think like surprisingly awesome.
I think you could build the case
for
Arizona.
Why not Carolina?
Carolina could be fun.
Okay.
You love Will Greer.
He did not have a good rookie minicamp, according to reports, unfortunately.
Don't worry. He's going to have about 5 of them because he's never going to play.
All right. Here's a weird fill in the blank. It's probably not going to go over well. I think blank is the best blank on the blank, even though his teammate blank is being drafted first.
You spend a lot of time on these questions, huh?
Yeah. I think blank is the best blank
on the
blank.
Can you just play the Ben Vol interview now? And
yeah. Even though his teammate blank is being first. Is it blank?
His lawnmower is more exciting than this question.
I think Devin Singletary is the better running back in Buffalo, even though LeSean McCoy is getting drafted.
Thank you, Dave. See, it's a really good fill in the blank. Thank you. Confirmed. Great fill in the blank.
Can you repeat the question?
Sure. I think blank is the best blank on the blank, even though his teammate blank is being drafted first.
Arthur?
What? That's very good. Blank stares across the room. How about this one? I don't really believe this, but again, just to spark discussion.
I think Robert Woods is the best wide receiver on the Rams, even though his teammate Brandon Cooks is being drafted earlier.
I don't know that Brandon Cooks is being drafted earlier, actually.
By ADP, he is.
Best ball or not best
ball? Yes.
Okay, that's fair. I was going to say, I think, and again, I don't believe this, but I think it's worth debating.
Wait, ask the question one more time.
I think Mike Williams is the best wide receiver on the Chargers, even though his teammate Keenan Allen is being drafted first.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Is it? Because Mike Williams caught 10 touchdown passes last year, and Keenan Allen's never had more than 8. And Keenan Allen does not catch passes. He could catch touchdowns. It's weird. He just doesn't do it.
I think Greg Williams is the best coach on the Jets, even though Adam Gase has been paid as the head coach and the GM.
That's good. That's good. Hey, look, Mike Williams,
doesn't
man.
Doesn't he have two of the Saints, former Saints coaches that were on the Bountygate team on his coaching staff now? Greg Williams is there. Is Joe, and he's related to Joe.
I was
going to
say, his father-in-law, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, can I give
an enormous money grab for the Jets coaching staff.
Can I give a Mike Williams stat now? He only had 5 games last year with more than 4 targets. In those 5 games, he scored 13, 24, 7, 35, and 17 fantasy points. Give this guy the ball. He produces. He's got a chance.
All right, so let me ask you a question. So they have to, and I don't remember off the top of my head, I think it's right around 110, if I'm not mistaken, Tyrell Williams and Antonio Gates targets.
Oh, I can tell you, actually, it did that. But yeah, go ahead. It's 45 for Gates and 65 for, well, nice work, Jamie, 110.
So where do the 110 targets go? Because you're bringing back, clearly, Hunter Henry, who should take on more targets
that
than what
be
Gates
80.
Had.
That should
You would think.
Keep in mind, before you even go any further, Philip Rivers had his fewest pass attempts in 9 years. So there could be more pass attempts
coming. I'm just looking at the numbers from a year ago.
Yeah, was it a low number, though? That's
just
the,
the vacated targets.
It's
so
a
assume that Allen's
play.
In the same range. Assume that Mike Williams is in the same range for now.
No, I want more. He has to have...
Obviously.
But he had 66 targets, so I have to assume that some of those targets are going to him.
I think you can give him half of that many more. Give him 100.
Yeah, I give him 100 targets.
Fair. So, but 80 goes to Hunter Henry.
Yeah.
And then maybe Melvin Gordon loses some.
Loses some?
Yeah, maybe. The running backs in general lose some. Or maybe Phillip Rivers just throws more. Because like I said, fewest pass attempts in 9 years.
I don't know. I think that defense is going to be nasty.
Yeah.
It just seemed kind of low for him, but sure.
But the run game was better.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it made sense to be lower. But it surprised me. Fewest in 9 years, that's all. Obviously I'm taking Keenan Allen first. But
Mike Williams is a good value.
I wanted to talk about him.
I think once you get past what is probably the consensus top 20 receivers based on ADP, he is one of my favorite targets to look for.
We will
it's
be...
Too bad he's not one of Philip Rivers' favorite targets to look for.
We will be back after this blank to read your emails and talk to Ben Volen.
After this bad question, then another good advertisement.
Exactly. There we go. Okay, we're coming right back on Fantasy Football Today.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Emails, fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. This is from Bruce. 14 team.
Wait, before you go on.
What?
Can our audience send in some fill-in-the-blank questions for our next show? See if they're better than yours?
Sure. You could email it or you can tweet us.
And the best one will get a spot in the podcast league.
Jamie, you shut your mouth.
Did you ever figure out who won the draft contest?
No, I will this weekend. Honestly, I will.
No one believes you.
I think there were a few people who had 7 right, so I just have to...
We're almost at the 2020 draft, so you might want to hurry up.
14-team half PPR league. What is Sammy Watkins' dynasty value?
I can't say it's very high. I think you're in win-now mode with Sammy. I think he's got at least one solid year left, and it could be as many as 3 or 4, but I don't think you can look at him and say, this is a guy who's going to be my wide receiver 2 for the next 3 years.
The thing, it's difficult. I have him at 27th in my dynasty wide receiver rankings. I think he could be top 10 this year, and he may never be top 20 again.
How old do you think Sammy Watkins is?
I think Sammy Watkins is 27 years old.
I was going to say 27.
Nope.
25.
Yeah.
So how old? 25-year-old Sammy Watkins, if he's, let's just say he plays 16 games and he puts up the Tyreek Hill season. Forget about how it gets done. Fantasy points at the end of the year. Where's his dynasty value then? The top 10?
Yeah.
And Tyreek Hill never plays for the Chiefs ever again.
Right. So that would be an example of him giving you three more good years. I've got him as a top 30 receiver on the yet-to-be-published dynasty fantasy trade values chart.
So, Jamie, like, what do you think? I know you gave a hypothetical, but what do you think his dynasty value is? Top 30 is a big group there, Dave. I mean, is he 25? Is he 30? Like
29.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty low. I'm not saying it's wrong, but it's low. He had five games last year with more than five targets, but never more than nine. So 7, 8, or 9 targets, and in all five of those games, Sammy Watkins had 74 yards or a touchdown.
And you have to hope that Patrick Mahomes gets better, because he only was a first-year starter. So as he gets better, he gets more understanding of how to use his receivers. And Watkins, if he stays healthy, will be his number one guy, assuming Tyreek Hill is gone. There's a lot to like
about
him.
What do you think? Give me a number. Like top 20. What? Top 20.
How many rookie wide receivers would you rather have than Sammy Watkins?
Zero.
Yes.
Interesting. Would you rather have Tyreek Hill or Sammy Watkins in a dynasty league?
Watkins. I mean.
No, Hill's probably going to play again.
This is a huge year for Sammy because he's got the team can cut him and save $14 million on the cap before 2020.
That's interesting.
Yeah, he's got a ball out.
All right, next email. Am I wrong to say that Sammy Watkins, that Tyreek Hill is going to probably play again?
Almost for sure, yeah, I would say.
Dan in Liverpool. We have a small standard scoring league, 6 members. To make up for the small amount of players, we have deep rosters. 2 quarterbacks, 3 running backs, 3 wide receivers, tight end, 2 flexes, kicker and DST, and 7 bench spots. Due to trading up for picks, I have managed to secure myself the 5th, 6th, and 8th overall picks. What would you do in this spot? 3 picks, 5, 6, and 8. Remember, he starts 2 quarterbacks, 3 running backs, 3 receivers, 2 flex.
I'd probably start with 2 running backs and a receiver.
Standard scoring, so yeah, it favors the running backs.
And just because it's a 2 quarterback league, normally we say, oh, you've got to get a quarterback early, but there's only 6 teams, so there's only 12 starting quarterbacks. You're going to wait a long time on quarterbacks.
Do you for sure then in the second round, if he has a second round pick, for sure take a tight end since you already
The 8th overall pick is a second round pick.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Yeah, I would take Kelsey with one of those picks.
I don't know what he's got after 8. If he's got like 12, 13, 14, then I'd target a tight end with one of those picks.
You know what? Here's why I wouldn't take a tight end. Because you're starting 2 quarterbacks, 3 running backs, 3 wide receivers, 2 flex, and 1 tight end. So that one tight end is
the best one.
But he's not going to really have as much impact on the roster because you're starting so many players. You know what I mean?
But you're still going to start a player there. If you get one of the really great ones, who's going to have an advantage over the guy that's forced to start Austin Hooper?
No, nobody's starting Austin Hooper.
You've said this many times, Adam, about how where Kelsey ranks as a receiver.
But nobody's starting Austin Hooper. Like it's
well, they might.
You're starting Evan Ingram. You know,
you would hope that the 3 guys that were at the top last year finished at the top again, and then after that, it's a gamble still.
I guess you're right, Adam, because there's only 6 teams, only 6 starting tight ends.
But still, again, you know, you're hoping Evan Ingram is great. You're hoping O.J. Howard is great.
The other
guys
are safer.
Right.
Obviously. Of course, yeah.
And he's got so much capital at the top of the draft. Let's not forget that there's going to be great running backs in round 5 and great receivers in round 8. You know, it's not like he has to reach for those guys that necessarily that much earlier.
1 running back, 1 receiver, 1 tight end? You could start that way.
But that tight end has to be Kelsey, right? I mean, he's the only one that we could justify there.
I don't think he would go in one of the first 7 picks either.
Probably not. All right, from Joseph. Hey, Mo, Blair, Dawn, and Tiff. I don't know. 10-team PPR league. We keep 2 veterans and a rookie. I'm keeping McCaffrey and Green. Name the rookie I should pick, now a second-year player. Darius Geis or DJ Moore? I have the second overall pick.
I'd go with Moore.
I have not hit the Google search yet, and I'm just going to say, like, I almost searched before I said what I thought it was. I'm going to go ahead and put it out there and say what I think it is, just because I want. Is that the facts of life?
It is Black Monday on Showtime.
No.
There was definitely a Blair and a Tiff on the facts of life.
No, it's a Tootie.
No Tiff
on facts of life. There was Tootie. There was Blair. There was Joe.
Yeah.
And
Joe.
Natalie.
Yeah.
God, you guys
along
are
with
old.
Mrs. Garrett.
Mrs. Garrett, yep.
Mrs. Garrett, so hot.
I never saw the facts of life. Sorry.
That explains a lot about
yeah,
you.
Yeah, right. That...
I didn't even hear your answer. Geis or Moore?
I'd take Moore.
Moore.
You saw the au pairs of my life.
No, but I have unfortunately watched way too much Days of Our Lives in my life. My mom and sister are in on that. Joey C. says, I work the graveyard shift in Las Vegas right now, loading trucks with a forklift. LOL, it's 1 a.m. here. You guys reach so many people of all walks of life and do an amazing job. Thank you very much, Joey C. He says, one complaint, make the podcast longer. LOL. No. Okay, he's got a couple of questions. Let's see what we can answer here. Jarvis Landry in the sixth round. What do you think about that value? And are people sleeping on Hunter Henry? There you go. There's questions.
No and yes.
What? No to what?
Jarvis Landry.
In the sixth round?
Right.
What's the format? I would say no in standard, but yes in PPR. Or no in non-PPR, yes in PPR.
Okay. Okay, good. Thank you, Joey. I appreciate your email. Thank you so much for listening. This is from Levi. Dear Patrick, Baker, Davis, and Graham. Oh, those sound like Texas Tech or quarterbacks.
Yep. Mahomes, Mayfield, Davis Webb, Graham. Oh, I know this.
Graham Harrell?
Yes. Graham Harrell. That sounds familiar.
Yeah, yeah. So those are Texas Tech guys, right?
Oh, I know who Ben Volen's favorite quarterback is.
Who?
Gardner Minshew.
Well, I don't get it. Oh,
I know who his favorite mascot is.
Okay, here's the question. This is the song, right?
Take the good, you take the bad. Yep.
Yeah. It's a fun song. All right, I made a trade in my Dynasty League. I wanted to know what you thought. I gave up Leonard Fournette, Chris Godwin, and the 14th pick in the rookie draft for Antonio Brown and the first pick in the rookie draft.
Winner!
Fournette, Godwin, and the 14th
really?
Pick oh, for Brown and the first pick.
You've got the first pick in the rookie draft. Damn. He moved up 13 spots. He's got Antonio Brown. We don't know how long Fournette's going to be playing for.
You know how long Antonio Brown's going to be playing for?
3-4 more years.
Maybe.
And he's got Josh Jacobs. He's got two Raiders.
I don't feel as passionately about this trade as either Dave and Jamie do. I'm just going to call it a C.
You also give it up Chris Godwin here, so that's not nothing. Gave up Fournette, Goblin, and the 14th pick for Antonio Brown in the first pick of the rookie draft. He's a Tyreek Hill owner. He needs a wide receiver.
Do you have Dynasty ADP? Have you seen that yet?
You
had it before, yeah. What is it? What's the 14th pick right now?
I don't have it in front of me, but it's right around Kyler or one of the tight ends.
Because I was going to say that could be Daryl Henderson.
Yeah.
It could be. I think he was a little earlier than that.
He might be, but I'm thinking ranges.
If you were doing a startup dynasty league right now, who would you take first, Antonio Brown or Leonard Fournette?
I think I'd take Brown.
I think I'd take Fournette.
I would probably take Fournette as well.
You know what, Levi? I think this is a good trade in the sense that both teams probably won. I mean,
I would take Brown.
You just looked something up and saw that Brown?
Yeah.
All right, so Ben Volen is about to come on. We recorded this a few days ago, so if any breaking news happens with the Patriots, you know, we don't know about it. But it was
so
a
when
great,
they trade for Kyle Rudolph.
Yeah, they trade for Kyle Rudolph, exactly. We had a great time talking to him, and I think you will really enjoy it. It's actually very fantasy-relevant stuff. So please enjoy Ben Volen. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll come back. I'm not sure if it's going to be Monday or Tuesday, but we'll talk to you early next week with another awesome edition of Fantasy Football Blank. Time for today's guest. We got Ben Volen, an NFL and Patriots writer for the Boston Globe. You can follow him on Twitter at Ben Volen, V-O-L-I-N. Hello, Ben Volen. Thanks for coming on. Great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Now, you know Jamie and Dave, old friends.
I do. We go way back. I'm the only idiot who moves from South Florida up to Boston and not the other way around. But yeah, back in the day, Jamie and I used to work together down in Palm Beach Post, Florida.
That's right.
Ah, very nice. Very nice. Well, you know, look,
Ben's gone on to bigger and better things than I have, though. So congratulations to you.
In 30 or 40 years, you move back to Palm Beach and come full circle. How about that? So the Super Bowl champion Patriots drafted N'Keal Harry in round one, obviously very fantasy relevant. Drafted running back Damian Harris in round three. Drafted, I don't know, Ben, the two offensive linemen with the hardest names to pronounce in the draft. Is that fair in rounds three and four?
Very fair. Yadni Kajust from West Virginia and Yalta Froholt from Arkansas by way of Denmark. Only the second player from Denmark ever drafted in the NFL. The first was a kicker you may have heard of, a Hall of Famer named Morten Andersen. Hmm. That was all the way back in 1982. So Froholt is the first position player ever drafted by the Patriots. Fourth round, and they like him. The Patriots have Brett Bielema on their staff, and he coached Froholt at Arkansas. And I've been told they like him as a center. So we'll see if maybe not this year, but the Patriots usually redshirt their offensive lineman, but maybe next year he competes for a starting interior line job.
Cool. All right, so let's start with the running game. They had the third most carries in the NFL last year. Why did they draft Damian Harris in round three, and what role will he play?
Even though they had a well-stocked backfield already heading into the draft, you can never have too many of those guys, and especially the Patriots. They all do a little bit of different roles, and like Rex Burkhead, great player, a real Swiss Army knife for them, but is always nicked up, is always battling injuries, has been tough to depend on in that department for the last 2 years. James White has been great out of the backfield, but he's really pretty strictly a third down kind of pass catching receiver back. And Sony Michel was there between the tackles guy last year, and I don't think that's really his true role. They wanted Jeremy Hill from Cincinnati to fill that role, and he tore his ACL in the first game of the season. And Sony Michel by default was the between the tackle guys, but I don't think he came into the league with knee injuries and knee issues, and B, I don't think he's a 25 carry game guy. So there was room for another back, and they got a young, cheap legs in Harris, Damian Harris, and they got a guy who's pretty productive in a limited role at Alabama. So just with injuries and depth and how important the run game is to that offense now, I think you can never have enough running backs.
So, Ben, how do you see it all breaking down? I don't know, percentage-wise or carry-wise, you know, how do you see the backfield touches being distributed this season?
Well, I do think that Sony Michel struggled a lot in the short yardage and the goal line situations last year. So I could see Harris picking up the slack in that situation. James White has such a defined role as the third down back, as he's a slot receiver. He does carry the ball, but only, you know, out of the shotgun when the defense is playing back and expecting to pass, those type of situations when the Patriots have blocking advantages. So I think it's going to come down to Harris and Michel for first and second downs, and they're probably just going to ride the hot hand. Burkhead will be a change of pace guy. Again, he's more, I think, of a receiver type like James White. So they have four backs who all kind of do different things in different roles. But I think if you're looking for rushing touchdowns and first and second down guys, you know, Harris is a decent bet because Sony Michel, the numbers look good, but I think his rookie year could have been better last year.
So when Bill Belichick hears this, it's going to be Brandon Bolden as their full-time guy, right?
Yeah, if not a tight end. Although Bolden, he'll make the team as a special teamer, but you know he's not a ball carrier here. But he had two huge touchdown runs against them last year when he was in Miami, and it almost cost them, or it did cost them playoff seeding and everything. So Brandon Bolden, in an emergency, you're right, he's the fifth guy, but I would expect him mostly to be special teams.
So Dave and Jamie, why don't you react to that? And if you think we need to start, you know, considering, or if we already have, downgrading Sony Michel?
I continue to drop him. I mean, I think Ben is 100% accurate. You know, it's going to be another frustrating Patriots situation, aside, I think, from what James White does. Michel should be the first guy taken in certainly non-PPR leagues, but I think the addition of Harris and how they want to sort of operate is going to make it frustrating to say Sony Michel for 16 games can be, or for, you know, a 13-game fantasy season can be a guy you can confidently start week in, week out. Certainly at the beginning of the season, so you see how it all sort of works out.
Yeah, my jaw is kind of on the floor. Ben, I've been reading your stuff for years, and I totally trust you on this. I loved what I saw from Sony Michel last year, and I really loved what I saw from Damian Harris at Alabama. And yeah, maybe I knew in the back of my mind that this was a possibility. The fact that it's going to be an annoying three-headed monster, I'll tell you what, it makes me want to take James White first in PPR. Put him ahead of the pack. You know he's going to catch a lot of passes.
Right?
No, I had Sony ahead of him in PPR. Yeah, but it was close. Now I don't think it's close anymore. And now this is great for me because I definitely love Damian Harris coming out. Now I've got a reason to take him late and just to wait and see what happens. My reaction to that is I shouldn't be surprised, but I am. I think that's really how I'm feeling right now.
Right. Well,
if I could chime in, I for sure would keep an eye on Harris, and he'll definitely be the better value than Michel. Sony Michel's short yardage rushing was bad enough last year that they started handing off to James Devlin, the fullback. And you look at his rushing numbers, he had a career year in terms of carries and touchdown runs. And that was because Sony Michel wasn't getting it done. And I don't know if that's the role they necessarily drafted him for. Like I said, they wanted Jeremy Hill to be in that role. So I think Harris kind of slides into the Jeremy Hill role. And that's a guy who was going to have a nice role for the Patriots until he tore his ACL in week one. Just depth is so important for that team because they really do want to be a running, ball control, play action type of offense, big and physical. And you can't just rely on one running back. Injuries are going to happen. They need to have depth there. So I do think Sony Michel will probably be overdrafted and Harris will probably be underdrafted.
Well,
I love that Ben plays fantasy.
Yeah, it's always good. I love talking to the writers who play fantasy. Let's talk about the passing game then. You know, Tom Brady, I believe he was the number 11 quarterback in 4 point per passing touchdown, number 12 in 6 point per passing touchdown. They still had a very good year, but they obviously are a running team at this point. So N'Keal Harry in round one, bringing back Julian Edelman, new tight ends in the mix. I could ask you specifically about players, but you know what? You did such a nice job with the running backs. Why don't you break down the pass catchers and how you see it looking in 2019?
Well, the good news is Julian Edelman's back, and we saw last year how good of a connection he has with Brady and how he's the engine of the offense. It really goes through Edelman. I see no reason why him and Brady won't connect, and as long as he stays healthy, he'll have a great productive year. Look, they don't have Gronk anymore, and he wasn't the same Gronk for most of last year, but the offense did struggle when he wasn't playing as well. And now they really are just taping it together with Band-Aids trying to replace him. They signed Matt Lacoste from Denver, who I think at best is probably realistically a number two tight end. They brought Ben Watson out of retirement. We'll see how much he has left in the tank if he makes the team. Same kind of deal with Austin Seferian Jenkins, a big enough tight end where he can do the inline blocking and the receiving, but they only gave him like 80,000, 50,000 guaranteed, so I don't think he's a lock to make the team by any stretch. Honestly, they might just be using their tight ends as blockers this year. They might not be emphasizing them in the offense as much. And if you look at who they've got on the outside receiver, they've drafted or signed like 7 or 8 receivers this year, and they're all 6'2" or 6'3" and 210 pounds. It's uncanny. It's like they have a type. N'Keal Harry is those dimensions. He's actually a little bit bigger at 228. Demaryius Thomas is that size. The undrafted rookies they signed are all that size. Josh Gordon is obviously that size. So I think they liked what they got out of Josh Gordon last year, that big physical presence on the outside. But they know they can't rely on him to stay active for the most of the games this season. So they went out and got Brady a shiny new target, N'Keal Harry. Demaryius Thomas coming off a torn ACL, I think is a good candidate to be a second half of the season type of guy. They stash him on PUP maybe for the first 6 weeks and then bring him back slowly, give Brady a new weapon in November and December. Brady, I'm not optimistic on him having a bounce back year. I think he's probably looking at similar stats. He still has Edelman. He still has James White. Frankly, those are probably going to be his top two receivers. But after that, there are a lot of question marks and a lot of unknowns, and Brady is going to be 42 years old. So this is really going to be a running team. James Devlin, the fullback, being the lead blocker. Harris and Burkhead and Sony Michel leading the way, and then a lot of play-action passing. So I'm not quite sure what to make yet of Brady and his weapons. We'll see what Josh McDaniels and those guys can come up with early in the season.
I mean, it sounds to me like they're going big. And the fact that you said what you said about the tight ends kind of lends itself to that, even getting Jared Valdir, adding to that depth. And one of the things that I liked about N'Keal Harry at Arizona State was his blocking, that he is able to push guys way out of the way and open up room for other players to gain yards. Is that part of what they liked about Harry? What is it that they specifically see beyond that with him?
Yeah, I'd say his physicality and his willingness in the run game to be a blocker, that's always a plus for the Patriots. They are a running team. You know, like, you don't think – like, Rob Gronkowski was always a great blocker. Julian Edelman is a great blocker. So having your guys who are receivers who can also carry their weight in the run game is very important. The Harry draft pick was interesting for two reasons. One, this was Bill Belichick's 20th draft with the Patriots. This was the first time he ever used a first-round pick on a receiver. They had used one in the past at number 36. They took Chad Jackson. Obviously didn't go so well, but it was unique for Belichick to use a pick that high on a receiver. Also, Harry is not the Swiss Army knife. Usually the Patriots love these guys who are versatile and they play in the slot and they played quarterback and you can hand them the ball and line them up all over the field. N'Keal Harry is really just an X. He's a big physical outside receiver who can win contested catches. He can beat, you know, smaller cornerbacks with his physicality. And as you said, he can dominate in the run game. And I think it's the Patriots are, again, when most of the NFL zigs, they zag. I think the NFL is going to a speed league. And I see the Patriots countering and trying to go big and physical. The offensive line, Jared Valdir, they just signed for offensive tackle, 6'8", 325 pounds. They went out and got another between the tackles running back and Harris. They love their fullback, James Devlin. They're going out and getting a bunch of 6'3" receivers. And, oh, by the way, their second round pick was a cornerback, Jawan Williams, who's 6'4". So I just think across both sides of the ball, the Patriots are going for big physical size. And that's the type of offense they just want to bully the other team, where you saw it in the Super Bowl. Their linebackers, Mark Barron for the Rams, is 220 pounds. That's where the NFL is going. The Patriots are countering by going more big and physical.
Ben, if you had to pick one of the Patriots receivers to mow your lawn,
good time. Would it be? It'd probably be Edelman. He's a real grinder. yeah, unfortunate timing with the lawnmower. But those are the pitfalls of working from home, I guess.
That's all right.
A soundproof studio here.
It's all right. We're sitting in a podcast studio that the air conditioning is out. So imagine that in Florida in May.
I'm very comfortable in my home right now.
Nobody likes you, though.
That's true. That's a good point.
I like you, Adam.
Thank you. Who has a better chance? It's probably an easy one. Who has a better chance of playing for the Patriots this year, Josh Gordon or Rob Gronkowski?
Josh Gordon does. I think he's coming back. I think Roger Goodell wants to bring him back. He has actually developed a relationship with Josh Gordon, likes him, and they've been trying to help him, and they've been bending over backwards, like creating new rules for him to try to get him back. Also, I think he'll be back at some point, whether that's training camp or September or October, I'm not quite sure, but I do think Gordon will be back. I'm not so bullish on Gronk coming back. I don't think he's going to stay in football shape. I don't think he's just going to – like, that's a different kind of workout than what I think he wants to put his body through. I think he wants to do a lot of yoga and hang out in Miami, which, frankly, is what we should all be doing.
Yeah.
I don't think he can just snap his fingers and show up in September and say, I'm ready to go. And so I don't think he's going to stay in football shape. And I think he's done. I think he's tired of the hits and always being bruised and all the rehab and all that stuff. Like, I think 9 years in the league was plenty for him. I think he shored up his Hall of Fame credentials and he's going to be a lock. So I think Gronk is done.
When do you think Josh Gordon could realistically be back?
Yeah, I don't know. It could be August. It could be September. Last year he came back for a training camp at some point with the Browns. And then he, you know, they released him and the Patriots claimed him and he showed up the next day and all that stuff. So we haven't gotten any sort of clarity from Roger Goodell. And that's why, you know, the Patriots are certainly not counting on him. And they've drafted other players who can, I think, fill his role. And I think that's how they see N'Keal Harry. But Anything Gordon gives them this year is a bonus, and I do think he'll be back at some point. And you know, we'll see if he can stay, you know, stay clean and stay off the suspended list and all those things. But I do think he'll be back. But the Roger Goodell and the Patriots really have offered, and I don't think they know yet. I think they're waiting to, you know, see how Gordon's doing and his off-field stuff as well. But I do think he'll be back.
Dave,
I want to go back to Harry. If you had to tag a stat line to him, do you see him contributing to the point of 800 yards and 5 touchdowns this year? Do you think it could be more than that? I know it's rare when we've seen a perimeter receiver put up good numbers in this Patriots offense.
I don't know about that. But it's hard for rookies to come in and be very productive right away. It's a demanding offense that relies a lot on option routes and, both the quarterback and the receiver reading the defense both before and after the snap and knowing if this guy goes this way, we're going to go here. And just, you know, Julian Edelman, years and years of working with Tom Brady, you can see how good they are and how they're just so compatible. It's going to take N'Keal Harry a little bit to get on that same page. I think the Patriots feel like how they integrated Josh Gordon last year, that gives them confidence. They don't have to give N'Keal Harry 100 different things. Just here are 5 different, 10 different things. Here's your role. And let's see what you can do. So I would temper expectations, maybe 500-600 yards, 40 something catches, 4 or 5 touchdowns. Maybe, you know, it's going to be a tough rookie year for him at some points. I don't think he's going to be able to come in and have the same impact that Josh Gordon did. You know, Josh Gordon had experience in the NFL and at one point was a first team all pro. We'll see what N'Keal Harry becomes. So I would temper expectations, but he's going to get snaps. He's going to get opportunities on the outside. And assuming he can stay healthy, he'll be an option, but he'll be the 3rd, 4th, or 5th option in the offense.
So, Ben, how long have you been on the Patriots beat?
I have 6 seasons, 6 AFC championship games, 4 trips to the Super Bowl. It's been quite a ride.
that's pretty fun. How would you describe a Bill Belichick press conference? And like, talk to me about like the first one. Were you intimidated? You know, and how have things changed over the years?
I think he's gotten a little bit looser now that he's won a few more Super Bowl titles, and he's a lot more his legacy is pretty much secure as, I mean, the greatest of this generation and, you know, all time. He's certainly on the Mount Rushmore. So I think this run of winning 3 in 5 years has really validated everything they've done for the last 2 decades in terms of having 2 different dynasties. Anyway, you know, sometimes you kind of know when he's going to be grumpy and grumble and snort into the microphone. And after games, he very rarely will talk about anything negative, like won't explain what happened on a bad play or anything. And his Wednesday press conferences, a lot of times it's usually when there's cameras there. That's when he's bad because he knows those clips are going to be played ad nauseum on SportsCenter and local sports radio. And so that's him setting the tone. But he'll do he'll do conference calls like on the phone where he's just great, or Friday press conferences. He's a lot more relaxed. If you want to learn about the history of the game, if you want to learn about certain tactics, or like I said, how a lot of the league is trending towards slower or quicker players. So they've, you know, countered with bigger, faster players. He'll go on for 20 minutes about that stuff. And again, he's a guy who, not only is he winning Super Bowls now, but he game planned against Mean Joe Green in the Steel Curtain, and he coached Lawrence Taylor and game planned for Joe Montana. Like, just the wealth of history and knowledge this guy has is incredible. So there are days where he's just great with stories like that and insight, even into his current team. And then there are times where he stares you down and gives you a sarcastic answer and grumbles and snorts into the microphone and whatever. Yeah, it can be intimidating at times, but you can't let him win. We all know there are certain questions that have to be asked, so you can't let him win. And even though you know what, he's not going to give you an answer, you still have to go through the whole dog and pony show, because you can't have a press conference where you're not asking him a key question, right, about Deflategate or Aaron Hernandez or whatever, the big play that you guys messed up on 3rd and 7, or why'd you lose in Miami last week, on what happened on the final play. Like, you can't not ask those questions. So you have to go through the motions. And I think at the end of the day, Belichick actually respects it when people are a professional journalist and ask hard questions, but in a fair and respectful way.
Sure. And I guess last thing for you, you know, that you've been around them for 6 seasons. Is there anything you've noticed that's not obvious? Like, we know they have Belichick, they have Brady. what makes them the superior team in the NFL? Maybe kind of like an underrated reason why the Patriots are the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, those two certainly gloss over a lot of the team's personnel mistakes, a lot of the coaching mistakes. Brady and Belichick overcome a lot. The one thing I think is underrated is the continuity they've had, and that's actually being tested this offseason. They've lost a bunch of coaches, not just Brian Flores, but assistant coaches, front office guys, scouts. So there is a lot of turnover. But they still have, you know, Brady, Belichick, McDaniels, Nick Caserio, Ernie Adams, guys that have been with the operation, key guys for all 20 years, basically. And the wealth of knowledge they have, it's like, you know, they could say, oh, remember that play we ran against the Chargers in 2007? What if we brought that back, but we added this wrinkle this time? And you're the Dolphins or the Bills and the Jets, and you're, you know, changing head coaches every 3 years, and you're constantly churning the front office and the coaching. How are you supposed to compete with just the institutional knowledge that the Patriots bring to the table every year? So I just, you know, their film vault is 20 years old at this point. You know, just the knowledge that those guys have, and having Brady as a coach on the field too. It's just, I think their continuity and their institutional knowledge is a real, real big advantage over the other teams in the NFL.
Who's going to be the defense coordinator?
So what I've heard is that it's going to be Bill Belichick, that he's at this point in the season, when Greg Schiano leaves in mid-March, like, who's left at that point? All the coaches out there pretty much have their jobs for 2019 already set. So I've heard that Belichick is just going to handle it himself. And I don't think it'll be that much more responsibility for him. He's already pretty invested in the defense during the game. A lot of times when Brady and the offense is on the field, it's really McDaniels is the coach, and Belichick has his back to the field, coaching up defensive linemen and doing that stuff. So I've heard that Belichick's going to do it. Brett Bielema is really the only other guy I think would be qualified, and he's going to be the defensive line coach. Jerod Mayo knows the defense, but he's a first-year coach. Steve Belichick, the coach's son, I don't think he's ready to call the plays yet, and I don't think there's anyone out there. So I think it's going to be Bill Belichick.
Hey, Ben, thanks so much for coming on. Great stuff. We really appreciate it, man.
Thank you, Ben.
I hope you guys can fiddle with the levels there and work with that lawnmower.
No, it's very natural.
I hope your landscaping is as great as the Patriots.
You certainly need it. So, you know, it's been raining a lot and the grass is growing pretty thick. So the lawnmower, it needs to be done.
It was honestly very strange. So just before we started the interview, I did ask Jamie how much it costs to have your lawnmower.
Well, I was telling Adam that I just had some Ring cameras installed on my house.
Nice.
And it's the first time that they're mowing the lawn since the cameras have been installed. So my phone keeps buzzing every 5 seconds that there's motion in my house. So Adam was asking about that. So
it's first world problems.
Yeah. Thank you for tying that all in.
Yeah, perfect. That's come full circle again. All right, that's Ben Volen, Dave Richard, Jamie Eisenberg. I'm Adam Azer, and that's it for Fantasy Football Today. Everybody, enjoy your weekend. We will talk to you on Monday. See you then.